It was halfway through September when she asked me to call to see some young cattle, Sturks of around 9 months, which were coughing. "They were really fit when they were turned out in May," she said as we walked across the grass to the gate in the corner. "But they've gone down badly this last week or two." I held the gate open, we walked through, and as I approached the group of animals I grew progressively uneasy. Even at this distance I could see that something was far wrong. They were not moving around or grazing as they should have been, but were curiously immobile. There would be about 30 of them, and many had their necks extended forward as if seeking air. And from the bunch a barking cough was carried to us on the soft breeze of late summer. By the time we reached the cattle, my uneasiness had been replaced by a dry-mouthed dread. They didn't seem to care as I moved in among them, and I had to shout and wave my arms to get them moving. And they had barely begun to stir before the coughing broke out throughout the group, not just an occasional bark, but a hacking chorus which seemed almost to be tearing the little animals apart. And they weren't just coughing. Most of them were panting, standing straddle-legged, ribs heaving in a desperate fight for breath. A few showed bubbles of saliva at their lips, and from here and there among the pack groans of agony sounded as the lungs laboured. I turned, as in a dream, to Mrs. Dalby. "They've got husk." Even as I said it, it sounded a grimly inadequate description of the tragedy I was witnessing. Because this was neglected husk, a terrible, doom-laden thing.
"Husk,"
the little woman said brightly. "What causes it?" I looked at her for a moment, then tried to make my voice casual. "Well, it's a parasite. A tiny worm which infests the bronchial tubes and sets up bronchitis. In fact, that's the proper name, parasitic bronchitis. The larvae climb up the blades of grass and the cattle eat them as they graze. Some pastures are badly affected with it." I broke off. A lecture was out of place at a time like this. What I felt like saying was, why in God's name hadn't I been called in weeks ago? Because this wasn't only bronchitis now, it was pneumonia, pleurisy, emphysema, and any other lung condition you cared to name, with not merely a few of the hair-like worms irritating the tubes, but great, seething masses of them, crawling everywhere, balling up and blocking the vital air passages. I had opened up a lot of calves like these, and I knew how it looked. I took a deep breath. "They're pretty bad, Mrs. Dalby. A mild attack isn't so bad if you can get them off the grass right away, but this has gone a long way beyond that. You can see for yourself, can't you? They're like a lot of little skeletons. I wish I'd seen them sooner." She looked up at me apprehensively, and I decided not to belabor the point. It would be like rubbing it in, saying what her neighbors had said all along, that her inexperience would land her in trouble sooner or later. If Billy had been here, he probably would never have turned his young cattle onto this marshy field. Or he would have spotted the trouble right at the start and brought them inside. Charlie would be no help in a situation like this. He was a good, willing chap, but lived up to the Yorkshire saying, "Strong in arm and thick in head." Farming is a skilful business, and Billy, the planner, the stocksman, the experienced agriculturist who knew his own farm inside out, just wasn't there. Mrs. Dalby drew herself up with that familiar gesture.
"Well, what can we do about it, Miss Elliot?"
An honest reply in those days would have been, "Medicinally, nothing." But I didn't say that. "We've got to get them all inside immediately. Every mouthful of this grass is adding to the worm burden. Is Charlie around to give us a hand?" "Yes, he's in the next field and mending a wall." She trotted across the turf and in a minute or two returned with the big man ambling by her side.
"Aye, I thought it were a touch of husk," he said amiably, and with a hint of eagerness. "Are you going to give them the throat injection?"
"Yes. Yes, but let's get them up to the buildings." As we drove the cattle slowly up the green slope, I marvelled ruefully at this further example of faith in the intratracheal injection for husk. There was really no treatment for the condition, and it would be another 20 years before one appeared in the shape of diethyl carbamazine. But the accepted procedure was to inject a mixture of chloroform, turpentine and creosote into the windpipe. Modern vets may raise their eyebrows at the idea of introducing this barbaric concoction directly into the delicate lung tissue, and we old ones didn't think much of it either. But the farmers loved it. When we had finally got the Sturks into the fold yard, I looked around with something like despair. The short journey had exacerbated their symptoms tremendously, and I stood in the middle of a symphony of coughs, grunts and groans, while the cattle, tongues protruding, ribs pumping, gasped for breath. I got a bottle of the wonderful injection from the car, and with Charlie holding the head and little Mrs. Dalby hanging onto the tail, I began to go through the motions. Seizing the trachea in my left hand, I inserted the needle between the cartilaginous rings and squirted a few cc's into the lumen, and, as always, the Sturk gave a reflex cough, sending up the distinctive aroma of the medicaments into our faces.
"By God, you can smell it straight off, Governor," Charlie said with deep satisfaction. "You can tell it's getting right to its spot."
Most of the farmers said something like that, and they had faith. The book spoke comfortably about the chloroform stupefying the worms, the turpentine killing them, and the creosote causing increased coughing which expelled them. But I didn't believe a word of it. The good results which followed were, in my opinion, due entirely to bringing the animals in from the infected pasture. But I knew I had to do it, and we injected every animal in the yard. There were 32 of them, and Mrs. Dalby's tiny figure was involved in the catching of all of them, clutching vainly at their necks, grabbing their tails, pushing them up against the wall. William, the eldest son, aged 8, came in from school and plunged into the fray by his mother's side. Mai repeated, "Be careful, Mrs. Dalby," or Charlie's gruff, "Watch yourself, Mrs., or you'll get lamed," had no effect. During the melee, both she and the little boy were kicked, trodden on and knocked down, but they never showed the slightest sign of being discouraged.